This interview with Siska Markwick-Kemper is part of the March 2007 edition of the Jodcast. For the full show, go to www.jodcast.net.
Most of us think of dust as a particularly annoying nuisance, something which has to be cleaned up or gotten out of the way. I spoke with Dr. Siska Markwick-Kemper from the University of Manchester about the study of dust in our universe.
My main research topic is properties of dust particles in the interstellar medium, in the space that is present between the stars.
Okay, so when you're talking about dust, are you talking about the same sort of stuff that I sweep out from underneath the bed, you know, when we do spring cleaning? What is dust in an astrophysical sense?
Well, it's more comparable to what you find on the beach, perhaps, than what you find under your bed. What's on your bed is mostly organic. It's your own skin, basically. but what you find on the beach is silicates and other minerals, basically any sort of solid that we find on the earth, dirt, basically. And the sand grains on the beach very much resemble the properties of the dust grains that are found in space, except that the dust grains in space are a lot smaller than your typical grain of sand.
So the composition is pretty much the same.
Yes.
It's made of the same stuff.
Yes.
What is that stuff? What is the dust made of?
Well, the main component that we're looking at in the mineralogical terms are silicates. So this is just your average rock. If you pick up a rock outside, you know, or even glass, you know, a window, that is silicates as well. So it's a very common material on Earth. A lot of materials are oxides, such as iron oxide, which we commonly know as just rust. Iron itself, metallic iron, that is found as well. Other oxides are found. Also, we also look at ice particles, because from our viewpoint, the temperatures in space are low enough that ices do exist. And in many ways, they behave similarly to dust grains. So ices we look at as well. And then there are some organic particles, such as PAHs, which are really just soot particles.
Okay. Yeah. Let's go back a step, and you mentioned silicates and ferrous compounds. Can you rattle off a few chemical formulas for us? I mean,
the main component, I would say, is olivine, which is Mg2SiO4, and you can replace the Mg, the magnesium metals in there, by iron or calcium or whatever. The main component is the SiO4 component. That is what makes silicates. That is the main building block of silicates. The iron or the magnesium or iron or other metals you just throw in to make the electronic charge neutral. So there's olivine, which is Mg2SiO4. There is pyroxene, which is MgSiO3, and simply quartz, which is SiO2. Which doesn't sound like SiO4 anymore, but it really is. But the oxygens are actually shared. So on average, each silicon has only two oxygens, but it has really four, but they're sharing them with the neighboring silicons. Yeah, so those are all the types of silicates. And then there are things like carbonates.
Are these the most common sort of chemical compounds that we find as interstellar dust?
I would say silicates, yeah.
The silicates?
Yeah.
Okay. How do these relate to the stuff which falls out of the sky as meteorites?
Oh, well, that's very, very similar, because the idea is actually that, so whatever sits in space, at some point, you know, when star formation starts, you have a cloud from which the star forms, and while the majority of the material goes obviously into the star, there is this remnant cloud of material that goes into the planets and other particles that we find in the solar system, for example. The solid-state particles in there basically form the building blocks for planets, and the remainder ends up in things like meteorites and asteroids. So, yes, if we look at meteorites, we know that this material originates from the interstellar medium, and so does actually the entire planet Earth. There's been a lot of processing going on, so the entire Earth was molten during its formation, for example, and therefore has lost all memory of what has happened to it. And many meteorites have been molten or even vaporized before they became meteorites. But every now and then you'll find a particle in there which actually still carries the signature of its life in the interstellar medium, and we call those a presolar grain. Generally, these presolar grains are found as part of interplanetary dust particles, so they're often not sometimes also found in meteorites, but meteorites are already more processed than interplanetary dust particles. Interplanetary dust particles are really small, and you collect them by, or one collects them by taking a plane high up in the atmosphere, really high, so you need military planes for this, and equip them with little strips on the wings that allow you to collect dust particles from that high up. And the impact trajectory of the dust particles allows you to determine the origin of the dust particles, whether they're cometary or whether they originate from asteroids or something. And also, these are taken back to the lab then and analyzed, and sometimes people find truly interstellar grains. But even the grains that are heavily processed in the solar system are interesting, because many of the processes that occur in the solar system are similar to what we're interested in space.
Okay, so there's a difference between interplanetary dust, presumably dust that we find between the planets in our own solar system, which we collect with these high-flying aircraft predominantly, and interstellar medium dust. Yeah. So how can you tell the difference between the two? What's the defining feature between interstellar medium dust and interplanetary dust?
Well, the interstellar medium dust comes from a variety of sources. There's different stars that contribute dust to the interstellar medium. So when a star dies, it actually becomes a bit like a soothing flame and starts to produce little soot particles and silicate particles as well. And they get deposited into the ISM. But every star is different, and every star has a slightly different isotopic composition, depending on the type of star that we're looking at. So a supernova will produce a different isotopic signature than, for example, a nova or an HB star or whatever. So you can tell by looking at the isotopic signature from a grain where it comes from. So you can look, you can basically make an isotopic analysis. As it turns out, like I said before, all the material in the solar system is actually heavily processed. So that means that every atom pretty much at some point was vaporized and then back and then solidified again back into grains. And this means that the original birth cloud from which the solar system was formed, which had grains of all sorts of compositions, isotopic composition, is completely homogenized. It has a completely homogeneous isotopic composition.
It's all the same.
It's a very precise on, you know, parts per thousand, you know, or parts per million even. Sometimes it's expressed that precise isotopic composition. Anything that deviates from this stands out like a sore thumb and is therefore interstellar. Doesn't mean that interstellar grains cannot have the exact isotopic composition of the solar system, but we will never spot them. But in general, when things have a different isotopic composition, we know that they were not processed in the solar system, so they still bear the signature of their life in the interstellar medium. Yeah.
What do missions like Stardust do for your research, where this probe went out into the universe, collected some of this interplanetary stuff, and brought it back? We actually could see it. So what did that did that teach you anything new or something more?
Well, the Stardust mission, of course, the results are still pouring in, and it's hard to interpret where we stand with this right now. But the idea is that Stardust was a mission that went to a comet, collected dust particles from the comet, and then on the way back also collected a few more interstellar dust particles that were traveling through the solar system under a certain angle. So it has two samples. It has this big sample of cometary grains and a few interstellar grains, which are actually not found yet. If you're interested in helping to find interstellar grains, then there is a search on the web, and you can download slices of the material and look for interstellar dust grains. It's actually true. It's a bit like SETI at home, but then for Stardust, interstellar dust grains. Yeah.
So you're actually looking for the little tracks of the particles hitting the gel or whatever it was.
Yeah, it's aerogel. And the thing is that interstellar dust particles are tiny, and they only expect a few anyway. And they have thousands and thousands and thousands of cuts that need to be evaluated for the presence of these dust grains. So, so they need, I guess, help, because it's not possible to automate this. You need basically a human
to do it.
Anyway, the cometary particles are much easier to find, and the idea is that comets are sort of containing pristine solar system materials, so relatively unprocessed, I think what we're learning right now, and things that have already been pointing to in that direction, is that comets may not be as unprocessed as we think. They might still contain quite a bit of processed material. But I don't think the full consensus has appeared from Stardust yet, so we're still waiting to see.
Still waiting.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much indeed for talking to us on the Jodcast. We wish you all the best for the future research.
Well, you're welcome.